B-Pod Studios.
You're listening to Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Every day is an opportunity for all of us to get better, to work on the things that we need to work on, to improve, develop consistency, and find our role in the team, whether it's a coach, a player, whatever the role the player's in, whatever year he's in. It's an opportunity for all of us. So I want everybody to take advantage of it. I think he has. I think they all have.
Patriots head coach Bill Belichick talking up fighting for spots, competition on his team. There's going to be, I feel like there's going to be a name or two that ends up surprising all of us that gets cut, because especially on the defensive side of the ball, there's going to be someone like, I mean, Doron Harmon's good, but like if he ends up getting cut because, you know, they're deep in the secondary, I wouldn't be shocked. They're deep at linebacker. I just feel like someone's going to end up getting squeezed out, even if that's someone like John Simon, who popped late last year and had a great preseason game against Detroit last week. And I know they just signed him to a two-year extension in the offseason. Like, he could be out because they're so deep at linebackers. So a lot of competition going on. So there are things to watch for tonight in preseason game number two against the Tennessee Titans. But the big news surrounding the Patriots is that Josh Gordon, wide receiver Josh Gordon, has been reinstated by the NFL. Cannot report until tomorrow. He's not going to be able to play in next week's preseason game at home Thursday night against the Carolina Panthers. But he's good to go. He does not have to serve a suspension to start the regular season. So how about that? You got done a solid by Roger Goodell, who you hate, but you can't hate him anymore because he did you a solid, so I don't want to hear that. James in Taunton on Josh Gordon. Your thoughts. Hey, James.
Hey, what's going on? Here's what I see, man. I would be surprised if Josh Gordon actually makes the team. And even though a lot of observers, you know, think the Patriots are thin at wide receiver, I actually think they're pretty deep. I mean, they have to have four. Five is a luxury. You got Edelman. People sleep on Dorsett. He's a clutch guy. You can depend on him. Third guy, Harry, potentially limitless stealing. After that, you got this kid, Myers, playing like he's hungry. And that dude, Harris, seems pretty good, too. Then you got Berrios and all these other, these walk-on guys. Like, I'd be surprised if Gordon makes the team.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's just like that. People are bullish on the Patriots wide receiver core. I don't get it. And, like, look, N'Keal Harry flashed in the two catches he made before he pulled up lame with a hamstring that's been bothering him throughout camp, and they had to ship him back to Boston. Whoa. I don't feel great about it, what that injury is. A nagging hamstring injury for a wide receiver. It feels like something he's going to end up having to deal with the whole season. So unreliable there, at least for this first season. But there's talent there. Same with this Myers kid. But who knows? We're talking about camp and preseason. You got to take it with a grain of salt. It's all question marks. I like Philip Dorsett, kind of. But he's like a four. You know, he should be fourth on the depth chart. As of right now, he feels to be like two. Well, now that Josh Gordon's back, I guess three. It's not great. It's Julian Edelman and a lot of question marks. Gordon's going to make the team. But how long will he last, given his past? Like, that's, I don't know. Like, this immediate change in the narrative, Sean, of, oh, no, now it's a position of strength. Now that Josh Gordon is back. It's not. It's not. That's a false narrative. It looks like it could be. It has potential. But a strength? No. Linebacker is strength. Safety is strength. Cornerback is strength. Quarterback is obviously strength. You have the best of all time. But wide receivers are strength now that Josh Gordon's back? No, stop it. No.
If you look at all these guys and, you know, what their ceilings are, or at least, you know, how they performed at one point in their career, you could cobble together a really good receiving core. But the fact of the matter is these guys aren't at that point in their career. Cam Meredith, the guy who caught 66 balls 3 years ago.
Yeah, another guy with one knee. Yes, I keep forgetting him.
Cam Meredith. One knee. So, you know, Demaryius Thomas, what does he have left necessarily? You know, even like a Dontrell Inman was a guy who flashed a few times. It's like, oh, here's this nice big receiver with San Diego. And it's just like, yeah, if all those guys are playing at the height, then you've got a nice, deep receiving core, and God knows who you're going to cut. Otherwise, you look at the reasons why these guys are here, why other teams weren't taking a chance on them. I mean, you could say there's some argument that they came to New England because there was an opportunity here to win, et cetera, and maybe they could hook on and get jobs somewhere else. But these guys haven't been healthy, haven't been effective. It's just a really laundry list of guys who are could have, should have players and really, you know, I guess you could work it out where you've got four or five. Let's be I guess conservative here. Three or four effective receivers this year out of that whole bunch. So saying it's a strength, I mean, yeah, the Jacoby Myers is. I was seeing that after preseason game number one. Wow, look at what this guy adds. It's preseason game number one. Tom Brady's not there. I mean, maybe he does something great with Brady, but you just gotta pump the brakes right now. You got 3 weeks for Gordon to get ready. And even so, who knows if Thomas even returns to the fold, if he even has anything left in the tank at this point.
And Gordon, in terms of his ability, I mean, you go back to, what was that, 2013 when he was with Cleveland here? And who was Cleveland's quarterback at the time? He looked like Lando Calrissian. You know who I'm talking about. But Gordon, yeah. Gordon goes off in that game. He's very, you know what he reminds me of? He's Terrell.
Campbell?
Yeah, Jason Campbell, that's what it is. Josh Gordon's got like a Terrell Owens thing to him in terms of the body size, the ability, and you've seen it. Like, you know, he's flashed, no pun intended, time and time again, and he even did it last year. That game on the Thursday night against the Colts, you know, he's getting up like he's Randy Moss, too. It's like, oh, man, they haven't had this kind of thing in a while. The only issue with him, and it's not just it's a him, it's a guy with that type of ability, it's when Brady starts trying to force the ball to him because of that ability. And that happened in that awful game in Tennessee against the Titans last year. You got that a bit in the Miami loss down there, and certainly in Pittsburgh, and when he felt like he went off the reservation heading into that game. So that's also a bit of a negative to him, like because of the ability, does Brady try to force the ball to him? But you see, the dude's good. You know, he goes over the middle, kind of took a beating in some of those games last year. He did when he was with Cleveland, too. He's a tough SOB. So he'll help, but again, given his past and everything he's had to deal with, how much can you rely on Josh Gordon for this season? If he plays six games, I'll be surprised. I really will. Like, and don't get me wrong, from a human standpoint, I wish the best for him. I hope the best for him. We all do. Kid's got a serious problem. It's a mental health issue. He had a horrible upbringing. He uses booze and everything else as a coping mechanism. And people like that, like, you wish the best for. But in terms of me, the selfish Patriots fan, like, I don't know. You know, to look at this position as an area of strength, wide receivers of strength, now that Gordon's back, you know, I guess on paper, kind of, sort of, in terms of upside, yeah, kind of, sort of, but it's not. To say that right now, it's not. Julian Edelman, that's the one guy you can count on, and it's a bunch of question marks, including Josh Gordon, because of everything he's dealt with. 617-779-0985. We go to Mike in Dorchester on Josh Gordon. Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
My take on Josh Gordon. He missed out on the biggest opportunities like last year with the Super Bowl. He was always on Cleveland. Like, even when he missed the games, he didn't miss out on anything. I think it's a motivational factor that he, because that's why he's trying to get reinstated. He really wants to prove himself and play for a championship team. That's just the feeling that I get. Like, why would he motivate himself to even come back if that wasn't the case?
Well, he got a ring last year, even though he wasn't part of the postseason run. He played 11 games on the Patriots for them last year and contributed and put up decent numbers in that time. He got a ring. So if that's what he was chasing, well, he accomplished that, even though he didn't get to play in the postseason play in that game. I don't think it's that. I think he doesn't love football. I think he needs the game to take his mind off everything else. And the fact that his mind is probably racing 1,000 miles a minute, you know, thinking about his past and his horrific upbringing and everything else. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to try to crawl in the mind of an addict and why they keep falling down into a bottle or you know, snorting whatever it is so that they can numb themselves or whatever it is they're feeling. I think he needs the job. And I'm just basing this on friends of mine that have had to deal with this kind of thing. You know, they find an activity or they try to find a hobby or they, you know, try to have a sustainable career to take their mind off their mind. I think that's why he wants to come back. And I think it helps him. I think football certainly helps him. I just, you know, you worry about him in all the downtime. So who's going to be the handler now that, who is it? The guy that ended up going to the Houston Texans that they were all pissed off about, the character coach, Jack Easterby. He was the guy who handled Josh Gordon last year. So now that he's gone, so who's going to be around him? Like, you're going to have to hire someone like that, too, to make sure that he doesn't disappear and go AWOL for days and, you know, and his demons get the best of him again. So, you know, it's a lot to handle with someone like this and with him. Again, you hope the best, but I don't know. Given his past, I just don't know how much they can rely on Josh Gordon going into this season. and saying it's an area of strength. I mean, give me a break. You heard Tom Brady after that Thursday practice, the joint practice with the Tennessee Titans, when he's throwing to Braxton Berrios, and I know you Miami stands keep telling me, you don't know Murray, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman, Berrios is going to be the third guy just like that. Fine, I'll take your word for it. I hope you're right. But he was injured last year, and so far it's been up and down from everything that I've read at camp. I liked him as a punt returner last week against Detroit, so maybe there's something with Berrios. But Dontrell Inman, who's just a guy who was with the Colts last year, Gunnar Olszewski, this is who Brady's throwing to after they sat Jacoby Myers in that Thursday practice. And Brady sounded frustrated as all hell, and rightfully so, when he goes 3 for 8 throwing to these guys. Like, well, what the hell do you expect me to do? So he doesn't completely dog him, but he uses the adjective interesting while talking about them. Well, it's been interesting. Again, you use that when you have to grit your teeth and try to say something about about something you know sucks deep down. It's been interesting. And not to mention, they don't even have a tight end. So Ben Watson's also suspended the first 4 games of the season. And then what? You know, old-ass Ben Watson's coming back? And if he gets dinged up, which could be within the realm of possibility considering his age, what do they got there? More question marks there. So Brady sounding a little bit frustrated so far at camp and in this preseason, I think he's right to. Then again, I'm very biased because I am what you would call a card-carrying Brady Bobo. There's been other Patriots-related news throughout the week, including, just dropped in completely out of nowhere, from Tommy Curran of NBC Sports Boston, Gerard Mayo. The possibility of Gerard Mayo being the next head coach of the New England Patriots, post Bill Belichick. Gerard Mayo, who was last working on Quickslants, very affable, nice guy. You know, I can understand him getting the respect of the room, especially at linebacker when he's been one of the better linebackers of the Brady Belichick era. But we're talking about him as the next head coach of the New England Patriots when he's been just part of this camp and one preseason game. Wait, what? Huh? We'll get to that and your thoughts on that, including other things with the Patriots, like who could be other AFC contenders this year. We know the Kansas City Chiefs, but without even games being played, other prominent players for other prominent teams that you might have to worry about are dropping like flies. So we'll get to that along with the Gerard Mayo stuff coming up next year. And a Gasperless Gasper Murray on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, Tommy. My pick, Tom Curran. I think the next head coach of the New England Patriots is Mike Vrabel. What do you say?
I don't think so. I really don't. I think that the next head coach is a defensive coach, and I think he is actually in the building right now, and I think it's going to be Gerard Mayo. When you look at all the things that Mayo brings to the table, the fact that he will coach under Belichick as opposed to what Vrabel did, his business acumen, his time that he spent in the professional business world with Optum, the things that he knows, he's an incredibly charismatic person. Not to say Mike Vrabel isn't those things, not to say Mike Vrabel wouldn't be a good candidate, but I really have a feeling that when it's all said and done, if Gerard Mayo wants to coach the New England Patriots after Bill Belichick, that might be something that the Crafts would like to see happen.
All right, so it's Gary Tanguay and Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, earlier this week, talking about who could be the next head coach of the New England Patriots. There's been a lot of talk about Mike Vrabel this week as the Patriots are having their joint practices ahead of tonight's preseason game number 2 against the Titans with a 7 o'clock kickoff. And Mike Vrabel, in his first season, takes the Titans to their third straight 9-7 record. Just missed the playoffs at the end of last year. But it does feel like he's building something there. Certainly is very quotable already. There's a Bill Parcells thing, I feel like, with Mike Vrabel. So maybe, defensive-minded guy. He's been saddled with Marcus Mariota, who blows. So we don't know whether or not he can pick and develop a quarterback yet. But maybe. I could maybe see some potential with Mike Vrabel. But Tom Curran sounded pretty confident. And it sounded like almost informed opinion. Oh, the Crafts could, the Crafts and the ownership would really like to see Gerard Mayo as the next head coach to replace Bill Belichick whenever he decides to step down, walk off into the sunset with the lovely Linda. Gerard Mayo? Again, fine, sure, maybe, if he puts in the sweat equity and takes some lumps and maybe ultimately becomes, you know, a coordinator and puts in some time, but we're talking about him as the next head coach of the Patriots after training camp and one preseason game? Huh? Well, and I was a little bit surprised to read after that preseason game against Detroit last week that it was actually Gerard Mayo calling the defensive plays. Okay, I'll take those of you who cover the team on a day-to-day basis word for that, but that also seems fast. You know, a guy like Brian Flores getting the opportunity in Miami this season, that's well-deserved. He put in the time. He put in the work. Sweat equity. He did it. I just believe, like, you need the reps. There's been no reps for Gerard Mayo, and maybe Tom Curran is talking, like, way down the road, but that feels fast to me. That feels real fast to me, and maybe that works out. That'd be great. Again, very affable guy. Loved him on quick slants. Was one of the better linebackers in this Brady Belichick era, but for him to be the next head coach of the Patriots, like, where is that coming from, and why are we talking about that so fast? This was something we talked about on Felger and Maz this week when Mike was in, and I was in for Maz, and Mike wants Josh McDaniels. I think a lot of you want Josh McDaniels. It feels to me that to get Josh McDaniels off of Jim Irsay's plane at the last minute to go to Indianapolis when he was about to be formally announced as the next head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, that there was some sort of handshake agreement, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, you're going to be the next head coach, Josh. I would think. Like, otherwise, why would you leave when you're going to be the head coach for the first time since you blew it in Denver? But he did, and he's back. And I can understand why many of you want Josh McDaniels, and especially with the continuity and how everything has run here. He's been the offensive coordinator, worked with Brady so long. And once Brady maybe steps down or retires, goes to another team, because that opportunity can happen with his fake contract extension. We'll get to that later. But you want the continuity post-Belichick, so it's McDaniels. I don't know. I'm good. I'm good with Josh McDaniels. I've come to the conclusion, for me personally, I want a clean slate. I want all new. Once it's gone and done, it's over. Whoever's going to be here is going to have to live in the shadow of Belichick and Brady anyway. So in that case, I'd like to be all new. I don't want retreads or anyone that was under Bill to try to continue it and try to have the same playbook. You're, like, destined to fail. I don't see how that works. It's not going to. I don't want sons of Belichick, anything like that. You know, like Don Shula giving it over to Mike, like anything like that. No thanks. I'm good. And the name I threw out there, I would like a guy that's, you know, youngish, mid-40s to 50s, that has established a really good college program, and that's David Shaw. David Shaw, the head coach of Stanford, who's been in charge of that program since Jim Harbaugh left in 2011. He's established a really good program there. In talking about it at the time, I knew he had a little bit of NFL experience, but 9 seasons with 3 NFL teams, Baltimore, Philly, and Oakland. Mostly as a wide receivers coach. So he's been in the league. He's done that before. He's run NFL kind of schemes and other pro elements into Stanford's program. Like, David Shaw to me would be a guy I would like to see, just in the league anyway, but once Belichick's gone, like, that to me is a guy that I could see running the program here and establishing something post-Belichick. But I don't know, the Gerard Mayo thing, like, what did you make of that, Sean? Did you find that a little bit surprising that just like that, like, we're talking about Gerard Mayo as the next head coach of the Patriots after Belichick steps down?
I mean, there's certainly, I guess, credibility behind the whole theory of that happening, but my thought was, well, just how close is, you know, that theory to actually manifesting itself? I mean, we're talking about a few years here, but, we assume it's going to be a few years here until this position is up, but... Yeah, just the lack of reps, the lack of cachet. It's very random, and again, it's kind of thinking. Not that I distrust the source or anything like that, but is this just really a theory, or is this something that could actually ever happen? I've always assumed, Jim, you know, kind of contrary to what you're saying, is that we would get some sort of extension of the Belichick era to diminishing results. You know, where you're talking about 10-6, 9-7. Maybe there's a different quarterback. Maybe there's, you know, the same scheme, but the players eventually just kind of bleed away and the Patriots wind up being a shell of themselves. I don't think that's going to go immediately south, but it is an interesting thought that you have about bringing in somebody completely new and you know, because even you look at the Parcells era, I mean, look at what happened after that with Pete.
Yeah.
You had the same personnel, but you had a different guy, and it went south, not immediately, but fairly quickly.
No, that was a slow, painful erosion.
Right.
Those of us old enough to remember it, trust me, it sucked. And by the time 2000 rolled around, I was like, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Because I had season tickets at the time, like, this is killing my soul watching this team. And Drew Bledsoe, pat, pick. Oh, my God, it was awful. You people under 30, you don't know how good you have it. You really don't. Going off on a tangent there. And the other thing, too, so don't trust my judgment on who the next head coach should be, because I just reminded myself, thinking about that time when they were, you know, who to hire post-Pete. You know who I was banging the drum for at the time? Was Dom Capers.
Oh, yeah.
Dom Capers.
Yeah, but that was a guy similar to what you're describing. Yeah. A guy who had been established in the league, had some experience, had a little bit of success, you know, and where did he eventually go? Because he spurred New England for somewhere else, right?
Well, he was, at the time, he had gotten canned when he was the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, as you said, had some success there. Yeah. I mean, he ultimately ended up the defensive coordinator with Green Bay Packers for a while in recent years. I don't know what had happened immediately in, like, 2000-ish.
So it says here he was Panthers 95 through 98, Jaguars defensive coordinator 99-2000, and then the Texans head coach. So he didn't have another head coaching job until the Texans came as a franchise.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, he was the head coach.
He was their first head coach.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, I couldn't have more egg in my face with that one. Yeah, I wanted Dom Capers over Bill Belichick. I mean, Belichick flamed out in Cleveland, too. And so, and those of you that want McDaniels, I get your argument on this, because I'm a big believer in, you know, you learn through losing in life. It's one of the great lessons in life. Like, you know, you take your lumps, you recalibrate, and, you know, you learn your lesson, and you go back at it. And so in McDaniels' case, for those of you who don't want to make the case for him post-Belichick, you look at what he did in Denver and his horrible, horrible drafting that he did there, taking Tim Tebow in the first round, no Sean Marino, like, ugh. You know, maybe he's learned from that, and he can apply that going forward. Belichick certainly learned a lot of hard lessons when he was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and, you know, he applied those learned lessons to the ridiculous success he's had here over the last two decades here with New England. So, you know, I can understand that. You want to make the case for McDaniels by that. Like, he's been there. He failed. He learned his lessons. Matt Malden wants to go back and talk about Josh Gordon. That is the big news. Josh Gordon reinstated by the NFL late last night. Go ahead, Matt.
Hi, this is a first time, long time, but in regards to addiction and alcoholism, as someone who's not really used it in a perspective as to cope as difficult as Josh Gordon is, but I've used it just to numb my own depression. You know, it's just to space out and to just numb out and just go for it. You know, I can understand how he, you know, I look at it as like manageable depression. I mean, I'm not saying Josh Gordon's depressed, but I believe it's along those lines.
Oh, yeah, it's a mental health issue with Josh Gordon. I think that's evident. You read this, and I tweeted it. If you've never read it, it's from 2 years ago. An article he did, a Q&A on GQ. Gentleman's Quarterly, which reads, Josh Gordon on addiction, his NFL comeback, and using before games. And you read this, and he talks about his childhood and everything that he's been through. Like, you know, Josh Gordon's not in it to party and like, okay, I'm going to buy a couple of bottles at the club so we can get these girls over here so we, you know, and have myself a time. Like, no, this is, you read about what he's dealt with. And so reading here, the question is, do you remember the first time you used? I was in middle school, seventh grade. I was in the delivery ramps on the side of middle school with some friends. I was given some Xanax, smoking weed, and crap like that. In the class, I ended up not passing out, but really nodding off on the Xanax. Kids started laughing in the class. I was drooling. The teacher's back was turned. I just kind of raised my hand, asked to go to restroom real quick. This is my first experience of a high in seventh grade. To that extent, I was definitely out of control. I mean, out of control in seventh grade. He was using it to cope. Because of his rough upbringing. He goes on to say, this is where it started for me, the anxiety, the fitting in and stuff, not being comfortable with who I was. Socially, I felt awkward talking with the people, telling them where I was living. Other kids have nice stuff. You're poor, that type of crap. A lot of inadequacy, I think, is the reason I initially got into it. Yeah, so, you know, poor bastard's trying to fill a hole in his heart. And many of us are. And many of us can find different ways to cope. For him, it's got out of control. It spiraled out of control. And, you know, he's had these multiple suspensions, and he's getting another chance here. But this has to be it, right? Like, I didn't think he would get it. It really did surprise me. It felt like he was off the reservation. Tom Brady was talking about him in a past tense when he was asked about him when camp opened up. Same with Bill Belichick, you know, going grumbling and saying, oh, go ask the league. It's a league issue. Like, okay. Well, I just felt like, well, unfortunately, he is falling off the wagon again, and that's going to probably be it for Josh Gordon. And just like that, we found out last night, right around 6:30, Gordon's back with the Patriots. How much are you going to get out of him this year? Who knows? I'd be shocked if it's six games, but I hope the best for him. You want to continue to talk about Gordon, have at it. 617-779-0985. Something else I thought was interesting at the joint practices between the Patriots and the Tennessee Titans this week, and that was Tom Brady rekindling his friendship with former teammate Mike Vrabel. But was he actually rekindling his friendship, or was he flirting with his next head coach? We'll get to that coming up after the Sports Hub headlines here with Sean Silver and a Gasperless Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
He's been a good friend for a long time, obviously. You know, done a great job leading this team. And, you know, proud of him, everything he's accomplished. I think we all support him, even though he's coaching for another team. And it was just really good work. Good work between these two teams who, you know, they took care of us pretty good last year. We knew it was going to be competitive, so it's been a good couple days.
Patriots quarterback Tom Brady talking about the verbal jousting going back and forth with former teammate and his pal Mike Vrabel at these joint practices with the Titans this week. It's a Gasperless Gasper Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. And so there's been some great clips throughout the week that have come from this. There was one where Tom Brady was, you know, coming out, walking across the Titans practice field. And as I find out, turns out, like, when you get to the top of the steps, at least here when the Patriots practice, you get on that the top of the step, the practice field, like, you run across. And Brady's got his helmet in his hand, and he's just, like, slowly walking. And you hear Vrabel saying, like, run, don't walk. And Brady, you know, jabs back at him, telling him to mind his own ass. It's like, okay, you know, there's obviously a mutual respect there and some good ball busting going on. But I do wonder, though, is this just, you know, friendly ball busting and two friends, you know, rekindling their friendship because they don't see each other all that much? Because Vrabel's down in Tennessee, head coach there, Brady here, greatest of all time, quarterback in this team for the last near 20 years. Is it just ball busting, or was Tom maybe flirting with his next head coach? Here's Tommy Curran and Phil Perry from their Quick Slants podcast.
You mentioned Mariota's contract. He could be out as soon as the end of this year. We have talked many times about how Tom Brady's on a one-year deal. Understanding that it is probably a low percentage chance that Brady does, in fact, eventually move on, unless you want to amend my comment on that, would Nashville... In that, if that small percentage chance were to become reality, would Nashville make sense for him because of the Vrabel connection?
You know, I said it earlier today to someone here in Tennessee when we were talking about it. A Tennessee writer said, you know, Brady actually leaving, I'd say the chance of that happening is 10%. But if Brady does eventually take free agent visits, I would put the likelihood of him visiting Tennessee probably at 70 or 80. I mean, it's a good team in the AFC with a head coach and general manager who he's familiar with. And the more you watch him interact with Vrabel and Vrabel's wife, Jen, for instance, after practice, those are the people he grew up with. Those are the people who, you know, he had a kinship with. They're almost the same age. Vrabel just turned 44. Brady's 42. They're a year apart. They both played in the Big Ten. These are friends. You don't think that would appeal to Brady to be with a guy who is competitive and appreciative? You think Mike Vrabel's watching what Tom Brady's doing to this allegedly pretty serious defense and saying, my God, this guy, look at what he's doing, but look at what he's doing it with. So if I'm the Tennessee Titans, I'm finding a way to try and convince Tom Brady to, you know, head for the Blue Ridge Mountains or whatever the hell they are down here, because it would make sense on the surface, unless, of course, you don't think Madison Avenue's in his future either, because this ain't a place for a guy with a huge Q rating.
No, it's definitely not. Although that he would have to learn Good Old Rocky Top, too. That song's real fun. Good Old Rocky Top. Woo, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Yeah, I'm the a-hole for bringing up this in the first place, right? Oh, but now that Tom Curran says it, oh, maybe we have to be worried about this a little bit. Again, the quote from Tom Curran from the Quick Slants podcast there with Phil Perry, NBC Sports Boston, puts it at a 10% chance. Minuscule, but still 10% chance of Tom leaving. Because, you know, that's now a possibility for the first time ever. See, with that crock of crap extension that he got, it's not an extension, it's just a pay bump for 2019. Then he's a free agent, a true free agent for the first time ever. He has the opportunity to take those calls. At 4:01 at the end of the league year, a team can call him up, like the Tennessee Titans. Ring. Hello, Tom Brady here. Yeah, it's Mike Vrabel. Oh, hey, Mike. How are you? Not bad. You want to be my quarterback? Because Marcus Mariota sucks, and we don't believe in him. We're not going to extend him. Oh, well, I'll come down and meet you. He has that opportunity for the first time ever. So 10% chance of leaving, says Tom Curran. But if that were to happen, and he wanted to actually feel like a free agent for the first time ever in his career, dip his toes in those waters, puts it at a 70 to 80% chance of him actually taking a meeting with the Tennessee Titans. I floated out this this idea in the first place when we found out about Brady's contract, and I got mocked. Tennessee, please. No, there's a real relationship there with Mike Vrabel, and if Brady were to become a free agent, and I don't think he's going to. He'll be back. They'll figure it out, or he'll retire. But there is that possibility there, and I do think he maybe wants to keep playing to help promote his brand, the TB12 method, try to play to 45. Could happen. Tennessee would be a good fit. It's a coach he'd respect in Mike Vrabel. That's obvious. You see that this week. Their GM there, John Robinson, was part of the Patriots organization for, what, like 10 years? So that's another guy he can trust there and has had a relationship with him in the past. And in terms of weapons, well, that's a team that's just a quarterback away. Good offensive line. They bring in Roger Saffold, who was with the Rams last year. They got Taylor Lewan, who's an a-hole but a good left tackle. Corey Davis, good wide receiver. They also have Derrick Henry, who's decent enough running back. They got Deion Lewis. He's obviously got a relationship there. They're building a really good defense. Like, that's a team that feels like a quarterback away. And if Brady wanted to play a couple of more years, and if Tennessee offered him $45,000 or something ridiculous, guaranteed, I don't think the Patriots match it. And if he wants to continue to play, that's a good landing spot for him. I just found that interesting. I bring that up, I'm the a-hole, but Tom Curran brings it up, and all of a sudden it's like, ooh, well, now we got to worry about that. Yes, but I understand. Tom, respectable. Me, not so much. He's actually around the team day-to-day in the locker room, so I understand the respect there. Me, I'm just an a-hole who yammers into a microphone with often stupid opinions. There's an update on Josh Gordon. Bill Belichick, this I'm reading from Kevin Duffy of the Boston Herald, tweeted minutes ago a statement from Bill Belichick on the return of Josh Gordon. And it reads as follows. For the past 8 months, Josh's situation has been entirely a league matter. When Josh returns to our program, we will evaluate the entire situation and do what we feel is best for Josh and the team, end quote. So again, Josh Gordon has been reinstated with the Patriots. Many already writing that since he has returned, hasn't even practiced yet. Now the wide receiver position is a position of strength for the Patriots, which I couldn't disagree with more. But he's back. I don't know how much you can rely on him, but that's the statement from Bill Belichick. Again, for the past 8 months, Josh's situation has been entirely a league matter. When Josh returns to our program, we will evaluate the entire situation and do what we feel is best for Josh and the team. You want to talk about Josh Gordon, potential of Brady being a free agent, maybe going to Tennessee? Or a quarterback away would be a good fit. 617-779-0985. The other thing I wanted to talk about with as it relates to the Patriots, more an NFL thing, the competition, they're dropping like flies. Due to injury, and they haven't really even played any real games yet. We'll get to that, and I want to get your thoughts, and you too, Sean, on who might be a sneaky pick in the AFC this year. We know Kansas City's going to be there. They're your real competition. But outside of them, is there going to be a team that nobody's talking about that could squeak into the playoff picture and be problematic? Kind of like how the Jaguars did a couple of seasons ago. We'll get to all that coming up next year on a Gasperless Gasper Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Aaron Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
I know everyone's had their questions about Andrew and that sort of thing, but I really feel, you know, very confident that he's going to, you know, find his way through this thing. I think, you know, after Durant thing and everything, everyone's there on the side of caution, but quite frankly, this is not even in the Achilles tendon. It's, you know, in another area. It's a bone. You know, I'm not good at these things, but it's called, like, you know, Mo something else. It's a small little bone.
Indianapolis Colts owner and party monster, Jim Irsay, maybe spilling the beans a little bit too much on an appearance he made on Sirius XM NFL Radio earlier this week talking about quarterback Andrew Luck, who is also not participating in training camp all that much for the Colts, throwing here and there. No one's really seen him throw. The problem's in his leg. It's not his shoulder that he had been dealing with prior to last season. Looked like he bounced back. Hell, there was even stretch there where he was talked about an MVP consideration because the Colts kind of snuck up on people last year. They were one of those surprise teams in the AFC. They get into the playoffs, ultimately flame out after beating Houston, but lose to Kansas City in the second round. But it was like, okay, they're building something here. They finally have a really good offensive line. T.Y. Hilton went off. Eric Ebron finally had a good season. I think he had like 12 touchdowns, something like that. Luck looked like he was back. They draft well with Darius Leonard in the defensive side of the ball. Like, they were building something there. Frank Reich coming from the Eagles program. Like, it looked like the Colts were going somewhere. And then all of a sudden, this training camp and preseason with Andrew Luck, he's dealing with something with his ankle or shin. You hear him reference Kevin Durant. Maybe that has something to do with, like, you know, what he was dealing with the Warriors, with his shin thing. It ultimately became the blown Achilles. Like, whoa, there's a real problem here with Andrew Luck. And there he says in his opioid haze, it's like a Mo thing. I don't know, man. And we figured out quickly on Felger and Maz this week was Marshall Hook, just through the power of, you know, Googling. We figured out what he was probably referring to was, I'm going to butcher this, it's myositis, it's the ossification of the muscle. Basically, the muscle turns to bone. It's what, unfortunately, expedited the end of the career of Cam Neely after he was checked by Ulf Samuelsson in 91, injured on the play, hit again in the knee in Game 6. He developed this this ossification of the muscle in that injured area. That's what ultimately ended his career. If Andrew Luck is dealing with that's a real problem. The ossification of muscle, it turns to bone. You need mobility and footwork in the pocket to be a good quarterback. And I think Andrew Luck, you know, as long as he can stay healthy, can be a good quarterback, one of the best in the league. But that's the problem. He can't stay healthy. The league, the conference, continues to be the Patriots almost by default. These teams can't get the hell out of their own way. So the Colts are a team I was somewhat bullish on towards the end of the year. Hell, even at the time, I thought they were going to upset Kansas City and end up seeing the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. And they're building something there and felt like, you know, maybe their secondary is a little bit weak, but I thought they could be potentially problematic in the conference this year. And I'm a nerd for the league anyway. You listen to any with any regularity, Felger and Maz, you know me. Like, I like bad football. You know, I get excited for a Titans-Jags Thursday night color rush game because I'm a loser like that. I just am. I like the league. And I want the league to be healthy. And for the league to be healthy, they need their quarterbacks to be healthy. And this would be a problem. Like, Luck going down or not being able to get through the season because he's got ossified muscle. That's a problem. And then you have with the Chargers. So the Chargers come in here in the divisional round, get waxed, but they were a good team last year, potentially problematic in the conference. Their safety, Derwin James, who might be one of the best, if not the, in terms of his versatility in the league, fractured foot. He had surgery. Now they're looking at like a three-month timetable. Talking to Ted Johnson yesterday, former Patriot, three-time Super Bowl champion. He had this type of injury. He said like 11 weeks. So he's gone for a while. And it feels like there might be a regression with the Chargers just anyway. You know, Philip Rivers another year older. You have Keenan Allen dealing with an injury. Melvin Gordon still holding out. So I wouldn't be shocked if they kind of fell back and were like 9-7. So you have the safety one of the safeties of the Baltimore Ravens goes down. He's done for the year. The Jets lose a linebacker yesterday. You don't even have to play any real games, and everyone else is falling apart. It happens time and time and time and time and time again. And for most Patriots fans, I get it. Like, you sit back and, you know, throw a cigar in your mouth, pop a bottle, and cackle. Like, I get it. But for me, like, I like the league. I like the league when it's healthy. I like some healthy competition. And it just feels like it's going to be the Patriots and the Chiefs, and who the hell knows? I know many of you want to make a case for the Browns. I love Baker Mayfield. I hope he ends up being a stud in this league. He came on great last year. But, man, him with Odell Beckham Jr., and they got a lot of talent on that defensive side of the ball as well. That's a lot of big personalities for a first-year head coach in Freddie Kitchens, who we refer to as Freddie Kittens on Felger and Maz, ultimately named one of my new cats that. That's a lot of big personalities for a first-year head coach, a guy who's never even been a coordinator in the league. Like, and it's the Cleveland Browns. You know, they have that institutionalized stink emanating from them. It'd be great if they were good. On paper, they look stacked. But would you be surprised if the Browns went 7-9 this year?
Not at all.
Right? You know?
Not at all.
Like, Mayfield turns into a complete a-hole, not going, you know, down the Johnny Manziel route, but just, you know, falters under the high expectations. Maybe him and Odell Beckham Jr. get into it, and Freddie Kittens loses control. Like, they're the Browns. Don't lose sight of the fact they're the Cleveland Browns. So 7-9, 6-10, I would not be surprised. So who can you make a case for, Sean? Who would be a surprise team in the conference that, you know, because the Colts, again, they were ahead of it last year. Nobody saw that coming. They end up going in. I think they finished 10-6. Either way, who could be a surprise team in the conference this year?
I mean, I don't know if there's any team, you know, from the dregs of the AFC that's going to emerge and become a playoff team necessarily. I mean, you could see teams, at least the way that some of the wagering sites say, like, oh, you know, the Bills could win a few more games than they did last year. Okay, you know, good for them. I mean, I think if you're looking for teams that are going to emerge from the pack and have a nice, happy playoff season, you're talking about guys, teams that have been there in recent seasons and just had a down year last year, like a Titans or a Jacksonville. The Titans, for the reasons you enumerated during the last segment, you know, if Marcus Mariota isn't hurt /sucky, then they'd certainly have a chance to, you know, finish with 9, 10, 11 wins. And Jacksonville still has that great elite defense. I'm not saying Nick Foles is a savior necessarily, but if he can be competent, if Fournette can stay healthy, you got some weapons there, and again, a defense that can shut anybody down. But you know, this isn't looking for an upset. This is looking for the sorts of things like what you saw last year with the Tennessee New England game, where one of the better teams in the league, overlooks a team on a certain weekend and takes a loss. I don't see any of those guys getting to the second, third round of the playoffs necessarily, but you know, they'll be in the mix. I just the assessment of it's Patriots and Chiefs and everybody else to me is just all too real. And like you said, I mean, there's going to be a whole lot of bad football for the rest of the AFC.
Yeah. I mean, so when we talked about it on Felger and Maz, Marshall Hook made a case for the Denver Broncos. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, right.
Because I think Joe Flacco's just, I mean, he made his deal with the devil in 2012, had that ridiculous postseason run, and that was it. Joe Flacco, not elite.
Like, are you, excited about the Steelers? I mean, they could have different guys contributing this year, but does that really make them all that much better than what they were last year or the year before?
I think their secondary stinks. They're talented up front defensively. I mean, Roethlisberger's still Roethlisberger. Juju Smith-Schuster's good. They got a decent tight end. Like, you know, they'll win 10, maybe 11 games,
yeah.
But I don't really look at them as a legitimate playoff
threat. They're not throwing rocks at the throne.
I love Deshaun Watson. I would cut a finger off to have Nuke Hopkins on the Patriots. He's maybe my favorite wide receiver in the game. But I don't know. And they get talent defensively, but that offensive line is going to get Deshaun Watson killed. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up getting hurt and Houston ends up 8-8. Like, any of these teams have a major fatal flaw in the conference.
Right.
Even Kansas City. Like, okay, they played a shell game defensively and bring in guys like Tyrann Mathieu and they lose Dee Ford and they bring in, I think it's Frank Clark who was with Seattle. But I wouldn't be shocked if that defense will still rank like 31st in the league this year. Yeah, Pat Mahomes, real deal. Offensively, they're a juggernaut. But defensively, I still think they're going to stink. Mine is the Jaguars, for reasons you said. Defensively, it's mostly intact. They got the ability to get back to being a top-five unit in the league. They're going to stud after stud on that side of the ball. Ngakoue, Ramsey, Bouye, Darius, a lot of talent defensively, so they can do that. Nick Foles, ostensibly, should be an upgrade, I think is an upgrade from Blake Bortles. You got consistency, some stability at the most important position. And Leonard Fournette, I think comes back from an injury. I think some of those a-holes on that team, like Fournette, like Jalen Ramsey, were humbled last season. I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, that's a competitive AFC South with Indianapolis and Houston. But if Jacksonville won 10 games and snuck in, I wouldn't be surprised. And with that defense, they could maybe repeat what they did in 2017 and go on a little bit of a run, and you see them in the conference championship. But beyond that, like, I don't know. I mean, it does feel like the AFC is going to be down again, and the Patriots will almost succeed by default. 617-779-0985. You want to weigh in on this conversation, but of course the big news of the last 24 hours as it pertains to the Patriots is the reinstatement of one Josh Gordon. Your thoughts on that will reset here at the top of the hour after the Sports Hub headlines of Sean Silver. It's a Gasperless Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 Sports.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.